ॐ ध्यायामोद्धवलावकुण्डनवतीं तेजोमयीं नैष्ठिकीं स्निग्धापाङ्गविलोकिनीं भगवतीं मन्दस्मितश्रीमुखीं वात्सल्यामृतवर्षिणीं सुमधुरं सङ्कीर्तनालापिनीं श्यामाङ्गीं मधुसिक्तसूक्तिम् अमृतानन्दात्मिकामीश्वरीम्। So we have discussed the three shlokas in Pratasmarana Stotram. So the last one, the last or the fourth shloka is the Mangala Shlokam. So in many places or many people consider Mangalam or Phalashruti. This is also considered as Phalashruti Shlokam. So in many places even Paramartha considers Phalashruti as Arthavadam. It may be true in a way, but Phalashruti cannot completely be considered as Arthavadam when Shankara says in Dakshinamurti Ashtakam that a person who understands Dakshinamurti Ashtakam, implements it in life, will get Anima Adi Ashta Siddhis. What he means really is that whatever he needs, he will get. So Anima Adi Ashta Siddhis are all what we desire. We desire some siddhis, we will get it. So as is depicted in the Shikidvaja Chudala story in Yoga Vasishtam, when Chudala, who was realized, who wanted to get Akashagamanam, the siddhi of Akashagamanam, as well as changing form, getting a different form, she practice some siddhis, she did some practice, put some effort, and she got the siddhi. So that means siddhis are available for such a person, he can easily get it. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, or we shouldn't take it in the literal sense that such a person will get the siddhis, but it is just that he will have access to those siddhis. The basic fact or the basic thing that Acharya says is that he will not even want those siddhis, he will go beyond the siddhis. That means it is as good as getting the siddhis. So when we are going beyond the avastatrayam, it is as good as we are enjoying avastatrayam to the maximum, enjoying as much as possible. So we don't need to consider it as phalashrutis, as arthavadam, like Paramartha says. Interpret it in the proper sense, so that we don't misinterpret or misunderstand it. So personally, Phalashrutis, we don't need to negate Phalashrutis. Wherever in Phalashruti about Siddhis or Vyavaharika level it comes, we can just interpret it as such a person will have access to all Siddhis. He may or he may not use it. He may not implement or use it in life. That is what is the meaning. So I'm not going against Paramartha, I'm not attacking Paramartha or saying what he said is wrong, but it is just my personal view that Phalashrutis are valid, but wherever such things about Vyavaharika level Siddhis are mentioned, we can just take it that a person, a Mahatma like Amma, they have access to all Siddhis, they may or may not use it. It is just a matter of having access to those siddhis. Those siddhis are accessible to such a person. Oh, siddhis are accessible to everyone. Yes, but for such mahatmas, gaining those siddhis is very simple, very easy, rather than other people who have to work quite a lot in order to get siddhis. And if we consider it in a different perspective, siddhis are attained when the mind is able to focus on something. For worldly people, we don't even have focus on worldly matters, so what to speak about siddhis? Therefore, it is tough for them, whereas a Mahatma, a Jnani, his mind is able to concentrate or contemplate on anything that is required. So that means, since his mind is pure, he can concentrate, he can divert it to any worldly siddhis and very easily get concentration, very easily get absorption or samadhi and get the siddhi. That is the meaning. So here the Mangala Shloka, or we can consider it as a Phalashruti, is the last shloka. It doesn't have four lines, it is just two line shloka. And this is said in the raga Madhyamavati. So the shloka goes like this. Shlokatrayamidam punyam lokatraya vibhushanam pratakale padedyastu sagachet paramam padam. Shlokatrayamidam punyam lokatraya vibhushanam Pratakkale patet yastu sagachet paramam padam. So idam shlokatrayam, idam trayam shlokatrayam, trayam shlokam, shloka, trayam shloka. So shlokatrayam, this shlokatrayam, the three shlokas, idam, this three shlokas is punyam. So what is punyam and what is papam? Ultimately, punyam is that which gives us sukham. Papam is that which gives us dukkham. So it is not wrong to say that anandam or moksha or the spiritual path is punyam because it ultimately gives us eternal sukham, eternal happiness or anandam. So it is not wrong to say it as punyam. So it is punyam because it gives anandam, it gives parama anandam, it gives us eternal happiness. Lokatraya vibhushanam. It is a vibhushanam. So bhushanam means alankaram, a decoration. Vibhushanam, visheshena bhushanam. It is a special decoration, lokatraya, of the three worlds. So lokatraya can be interpreted, lokam can be interpreted in many ways. So lokatraya can be interpreted as the three Vedas or as the three worlds, means various worlds. So if we consider the three Vedas, these are decorations to the three Vedas because they give the essence of the Vedas. Wherever we get an essence of anything, that is a decoration, that is glorifying the Vedas by speaking its essence, glorifying the Vedas. The Vedas have many things. Glorifying the Vedas means speaking just about what is especially there in Vedas, what is very special of the Vedas or in the Vedas. Therefore Lokatraya Vibhushanam, it is also Vibhushanam for the entire world. Why is it Vibhushanam for the entire world? Because it is that, or these shlokas give us a different perspective or a different vision to the world of the Jnana Drishti that Ramana Maharshi says. Jnana Drishti, with this vision, the world is seen blissful. That is decoration of the world. It is a big task to see anityam asukham lokam as nityam sukham lokam. That is the toughest thing in life. That's where Mahatmas say that it is very easy to learn Vedanta when it comes to seeing in the world, when it comes to living in the world, when our actions, when our experience of the world contradicts or it goes against our teachings, our interpretations, our knowledge that we have gained. That is what really requires talent. It requires quite a lot of talent, quite a lot of effort, quite a lot of intellect in order to filter out worldly experience with the mental state of abiding in Brahman. So that means trying to see the sorrowful world as a blissful place, as pervaded by Brahman, pervaded by blissful Brahman. That indeed is a vibhushanam. It is not a bhushanam, it is a vibhushanam. So that means with these shlokas, it is a decoration of the world, decoration of the world with the ultimate decorative of entity of Brahman. Entity of bliss, that means making the world blissful. So Shankara probably is using a very good word here, Vibhushanam. It is a decoration, that means the world cannot be Brahman because the world is Namarupam, which is not Brahman. Essentially the world can be Brahman, that means decoration. So an ugly person can be made to appear as beautiful by various decorations, by going to the beauty parlor and other ways, other means, but naturally or essentially he is still ugly. Just he can be made to appear beautiful. That means the world is sorrowful alone. Namarupam is sorrowful because it is mithya, but still we can decorate it in such a way that our perspective vision is that it is blissful. Therefore it is vibhushanam. It is bhushanam, it is a decoration, it is not the world really becoming blissful, but the world or the vision of the world as blissful by decorating the world with Brahman, by pervading the world with Brahman in our mind. Again, as we discussed, we cannot see the Nama Rupam as Brahman externally. It is all in the mind. It is a mental vision. Decoration is always in the mind. That's where the famous statement of beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. We may consider somebody or imagine somebody as beautiful, whereas our friend might consider the person as ugly, and whatever or whoever our friend considers as beautiful might be ugly in our eyes. Therefore, it's always in the vision. That is what is meant here. The creation is always in the vision. So it is the internal mental projection or in the mind, considering everything as Brahman, considering the world as blissful. That is what is mentioned here. And so that is about the work or the three shlokas are very punyam because they give anandam. They also decorate the world because they make the world blissful. They make the world a place of bliss. A person who interprets or understands these three shlokas properly, spends time analyzing it and implements it, such a person will make the world a blissful experience for him and for people around him. So that is about the work. So what is the benefit really got out of it? So pratakale, at the time, at the dawn or dawn, during dawn time, during morning time, that means after or when a person is trying to wake up, when he learns this work, patet yahatu, he who really learns this during or sings, practices this during morning time, that means once he is trying to wake up, a sadhaka practices this, such a person gachet, he attains, he goes paramam padam to the supreme goal, yat gatva na nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. He goes to that state where there is no return. So here going or gachet is, as Shankara clearly mentions in the 15th chapter shloka, that gachet or attaining is only from the perspective of ajnanam. There is no real attaining, it's only removal of ajnanam. But he will attain, he will go to that from the empirical viewpoint, from the ajnani state, ajnani's perspective, he will attain the state of Brahman, which means he will be always blissful. Paramam padam, the supreme state, the purna avastha, the anandam, sachit sukham avastha, he will attain. That means such a person will be always blissful, such a person will be ever blissful. So as Shankara says, yogarato va bhogarato va sangarato va sangavihinaha yasya brahmani ramate chittam nandati nandati nandatyeva. Such a person might be doing yogam or bhogam, he may be having attachment to people or he may be without attachment, yet his mind is residing in Brahman. Therefore he will ever rejoice, rejoice and rejoice. That means such a person will be ever blissful. It just requires nothing but trying to notice or trying to analyze people with an open mind. You don't even need much open mind. It just requires our eyes. We just need some mind, mental state, some mental calmness to analyze or see Mahatmas like Amma or Balakrishna Nair. Then we will understand as to how this blissful state can be achieved, or can this blissful state really be achieved? Are teachings against actions? Do teachings really go against action, or they aspire action? Do these teachings, or will these teachings really give us anandam? That we can clearly find if we just view people, just view these Mahatmas or just see Amma for one day, see Balakrishnan Nair when he is giving discourse, or otherwise like just 1.5 hours or 2 hours, if we see, we can very easily find or very easily understand, come to the conclusion that such a blissful state is possible, and these Mahatmas are in that blissful state at all points of time. It is very easy. We don't need to implement, we don't need to put a lot of effort in order to just analyze or just view these Mahatmas. It is very easy. We have been going to Amma, so just go to Amma, just for 1 hour, just for one darshan period, just sit there and see Amma. We will understand that this state is very much possible. And if this state is very much possible by Amma, oh, Amma is an avatar, Balakrishnan Nair, Paramartha. There are many people who have achieved these states. Narendra, Vivekananda was in a state of sorrow. Like he didn't know Ishvara. He was struggling to seek Ishvara. He attained that state. That means we also can attain. Oh, Vivekananda could, by glancing a page, the page will be in his mind. I am not that way. So there are many people, many examples in the scriptures. Scriptures speak about many examples of people who are so ignorant. Kalidasa was so ignorant, he didn't know anything at all. By Kali's grace, everything happened. He became a great poet and a Vedantin. So that can very easily happen. It's not that I cannot attain it, I cannot do it. If the butcher, Dharma Vyada in Mahabharata could do it, we can also do it. And there are Balakrishna Nair, Paramartha and others, they have been from like each one of us, Amrita Atma Ananda Puri or Amrita Swarupa Ananda and others. They didn't even know what is Vedanta, and they have attained to almost this state of Anandam. They can do it. It is very much possible. It is not something which is impossible. It is not something which is beyond our reach. It is possible. What do we really need? We just need an open mind. We just need the strong desire for realization and implementation, or going by the desire. Having an open mind and going by the desire means, oh, I want moksha, I want moksha, I want moksha. Sit inside the house, watch TV and say, I want moksha, I want moksha, I want moksha. You will not get moksha. As Paramartha says, such a person will become mad. That is what will happen. So it's not enough to do that. You cannot go to the hotel, sit, stand just outside the hotel and say, I want food, I want food, I want food. We have to go inside, sit. Like when the waiter comes, we have to tell. Or we sit in the chair and then they say, I want dosha, I want dosha, I want dosha. We won't get that. When the waiter comes, we have to tell. So we need to know what to do. It's not just having the desire for liberation is not enough, as Amma said. It's not learning Vedanta, it is implementing it. That means just because we know things doesn't make us realized. Realization is when we stand by the truth, we stand by the knowledge. And as we discussed, implementation is not tough at all. It's just the strong conviction and standing by the conviction at any point of time, which means automatically actions come. So that is what is really required in life. And without that, there is no point in contemplating, or there is no point in having the desire or going to Mahatmas like Amma and saying, I want moksha. There is no point in doing that. There's no point even if we join Chinmaya Mission and get the Vedanta course. So, as Shankara says in Maya Panchakam, Shruti Shata Nigama Antashodakan Api Ahaha Dhanadi Nidarshanena Sadhyaha Kalushayati Chatushpada Dhyavinnan Tu Agadita Gatana Patiyasi Maya. Unless we have this, we use knowledge to do smaranam, bhajanam, and finally namaskaram. Unless we do namaskaram, there will be ego. That means we are in the clutches of maya. And that maya, even though we may give a lot of discourses, shruti shatanigamanta shodakan, we do a lot of analysis of hundreds of shrutis and then give discourses on that, but still when it comes to our own thing, we crash, we are not able to live by it. That is because of Maya, because surrender is lacking. So, Devi hi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayametam tarantite. This Maya is very tough to conquer, but once we surrender, once we do namaskaram, once we reach nididhyasanam, then such a person easily conquers Maya. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, punarapi janani jadare shayanam iha samsare bahudustare kripaya pare pahi mudare. So iha samsare bahudustare, it is very tough to conquer, but kripaya pare, through kripa. Kripa means pahi murare, seeking surrender, seeking refuge in murari, in Ishvara, that is what is really required. If that is there, if namaskaram is there, then we will realize. Until then, we will be crying here and there, we will be saying, oh, I thought I will get anandam from Amma, I didn't get. I thought I will get anandam from learning Vedanta, but I've gone back to the previous state where I was. I thought this will give me, but this didn't give me. Why? It is not the problem is not external. The problem is not with the world or the people around us. The problem is with our mind. It is with our ego. It is with our lack of implementation of Vedanta, which is actually, as we discussed, very simple, with intellectual conviction. Strong intellectual conviction means mananam, clear mananam, which means nididhyasanam, which means implementation automatically comes. It is not as tough. It's not that tough as we think it is. It is not tough at all. It is very easy, but that is required. If that is not there, then we will learn the scriptures. Once we learn the scriptures, we have an answer to everything. Answer means we will use kutarka. We will say, when it comes to realization, then we will say, when somebody says that you have to join Chinmaya mission, you don't have to marry, you have to take sannyas, that is the best path for you, then we will just ignore it, saying that, oh, it is some nama rupam speaking, and I have to marry, why? My parents said. What does it matter? My parents are Brahman. So that is what would happen. If Vedanta is a good weapon. It is a good weapon, but it depends on to how we use the weapon. It's like an axe. We have an axe. We can use the axe to cut trees. Instead of that, we can also use the axe to kill the person nearby us, or kill the co-worker, because he will get it, therefore I'll kill him. So the axe, it's the same weapon. It can be used for a good purpose, for a good cause. We can cut the tree and use it. Ooh, green friends, we can't cut the tree, that is fine. Cutting the tree, this is only an example. So we can cut the tree and use the wood to burn, to get fire, to get light. At the same time, we can use the same axe to kill another person. So it is the same weapon which can be used for the welfare of the world, which can be used for our own good, which can be used for our spiritual benefit. Ultimately, our spiritual benefit is what really matters. Or it can be used to ward off people who say that we have faults. So we can use Vedanta in order, after we have Vedantic knowledge, learning or preaching is not tough at all. It is very easy. It's as simple as Brahman and Namarupam. As we learned in Pratasmarana Stotram or Eka Shloki, one or two shlokas, everything is done. So it's learning or teaching is not difficult, it's very easy. But Vedanta, we can use that Vedantic knowledge to get anandam, the real purpose, or Janma Safalyam we can achieve. Or we can use the same Vedanta to justify our wrong actions, our wrong deeds, and to justify whoever comes and attacks us. Whoever out of Amma's will comes to attack us, we can use that. Say that, oh, you Brahman, everything is Brahman, so why should you bother, get away. And then the person goes away when Amma says something, oh, everything is Brahman, Amma, why, what does it matter if I join Vedanta course or not? Everything is Brahman, so I'll join. And then, when it comes to joining Vedanta course, then, oh, I was just reconsidering. Since everything is Brahman, why should I join Vedanta course? Let me go and stay with my parents. Let me do what my parents say. That is what will happen. So it's very easy to say, oh, I want moksha, I want moksha, I want moksha. but really standing by it, that is what is important. And with Vedanta, it becomes very easy to say, I want moksha, and also say that I am working towards moksha, I am working towards moksha, I haven't committed any blunder, I haven't committed any mistake. Though we know that we have committed any mistake, we can justify by telling that, oh, didn't Krishna commit mistake? Oh, yesterday only in Dwaraka Nirmanam story, you said Krishna was thinking. If Krishna himself thought, what about poor me? Like, if Vishwamitra got attracted by, deluded by Menaka, then what about me? Therefore, it is fine. We can justify. So, justification, Vedanta is a very powerful tool. It depends on whether we use it for destroying our ego, for destroying all the bad qualities in us and taking us to moksha, or we use it for our own justification. We use it the way we want it. So Vedanta is something which is as Chinmaya says, it is subjective, it is perspective vision. We can use Vedanta in whatever way we want. So this is the age old story of 5 or 6 blind people perceiving the elephant. So five blind people, the Jains say this story. 5 blind people went to find out what is an elephant. So they heard that there is an elephant, so they went nearby. So one person went, he caught hold of the tusk of the elephant. Another person caught hold of the hair in the tail. Another person caught hold of the leg. So one person said, so it is very smooth, but it is very sharp at the end. It is like a conical kind of thing. Another person said, no, that's wrong. Like, it is something which is hairy. It is very hairy, lot of hair. And another person said, oh, no, you all are wrong. It's like a kind of log of wood. It is like cylindrical in nature. So it will be like this. We can take whatever we want as long as we are blinded by our preconceived notion, blinded by our attachment, aham and mama. Will not be able to perceive Vedanta in the right sense. We'll just be utilizing Vedanta in whatever way or however it is suiting us, however it helps us to justify ourselves, to boost our ego. We'll be doing that, and in doing so, we'll be missing a great opportunity that Ishvara has given us. The great opportunity of getting a human birth, not only getting a human birth, but also learning Vedanta, which is one of the big thing with Dvatvam. It is very, very rare to get Vedantic knowledge. Nowadays, everybody speaks about Vedanta. Everybody is speaking about Bhagavatam. Everybody knows, praises Bhagavatam, Madhura Murali, Sundara Kumar, this person, that person. Everybody is speaking about Vedanta. And if we just roam around in India, in few cities in India, we will find this Swami, Yogeshwar, this Shwar, that Shwar, this Ishwar, that Ishwar. We will find a lot of Swamis and people speaking about Vedanta. But all those people will only misguide us. They will not guide us because they are themselves deluded. They cannot help us. But after having got a Mahatma like Amma to guide us, after having got a clear vision of Vedanta, with examples, analogies and explanations from Amma, and the proper way that Shankara interprets through Balakrishna Nair's works, and his way of interpreting, his way of speaking, his approach, Paramarthic approach, it is very rare to get. Even Paramartha discusses the Paramarthic approach or Nama Rupam and everything being Mithya only in Mandukya Upanishad. Until then, he may mention it once or twice, but he will never speak about it much, he'll never concentrate on it much. So after getting all this, it is but a pity if we miss out, if we really forget, if we really don't understand the importance. So it is very easy. That is also the reason why Amma says that learning Vedanta can be dangerous, because person who gets a diamond, but he doesn't know that it is a diamond, he'll not know its value. So the value of knowledge that we have got by Amma's grace, we will never be able to understand it, apprehend it. Then what to speak about implementation? And I am openly telling that this is a knowledge, this is a perspective which is very clear, crystal clear, There is ultimate or supreme perspective following which a person can very easily, instantly get moksha or subdue mukti. We can very easily get, that is what we have in our hands. It is up to us as to how we use it. If we didn't have access to this, we were just learning Paramartha or something of that sort, it would have been fine. By getting the right vision of Vedanta, getting a Mahatma, a Sadguru like Amma, and then not utilizing it, that is a real pity. So let us hope, let us pray to Amma that such a situation doesn't happen, and that we, as Shankara says in this shloka, we attain the Paramam Padam by not only learning Pratasmarana Stotram, not only daily repeating the Pratasmarana Stotram, but trying to imbibe the truth in the Pratasmarana Stotram, trying to do Smaranam, Bhajanam and Namaskaram, thereby get moksha or become Jivan Muktas in this very birth itself. Namaskaram.